And I see Mr. Angelo has joined us. At least I see his picture. Good morning, Paul, if you're there.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
There you are. You were moving around.
I am. Yeah, I know.
Yes.
It's, working at home, you have to sort of sit up straight, right? In the meeting.
Yeah, so we are on item 7, and this is the informational session regarding considerations for full funding. And this is, as you know, Paul, is intended to be a sort of a introductory socializing of the topic to remind us all of what it entails and the good news, bad news, and all that kind of stuff. And I know we'll get more detailed as the time approaches, but with that intro, the floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. I'm just going to browse individual windows. I'm getting the deck up here to make sure everything looks okay. And I'm going to do this in presentation mode like that. And I'm going to share screen. And there it is. There we go. So are you seeing a title slide, informational session, considerations when approaching full funding?
Yes, sir. We are.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair Gordon. I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. The slides are actually a little more detailed than just a real high-level overview. So I'm going to touch on them, and then really we can get to your trustees' questions as quickly as possible. We're going to talk about, you know, what is full funding and when does it happen? We're going to talk about your pension plan funding policy objectives and how those address the situation of full funding. And then a little bit of actuarial considerations, which sort of overlaps really with some investment considerations as well. First of all, you know, the terminology is tricky here. You know, there's discussion in the actuarial industry. Is it even good to use terms like full funding? Because it sounds like you're done and you can like stop worrying about funding. Well, that's not true, because you can go in and out of full funding. There's also, even in the actuarial standards, that you have to be clear when you say full funding, it doesn't mean that you could go to an insurance company and settle your liabilities. It's really a budgeting issue. So when we say full funding, all that means is that your actuarial accrued liability, which is the cost that accrued so far, are exceeded by your assets. The way I like to think of it is, it means that all you have to pay going forward is the normal cost. And in fact, back in the 90s, what would happen was, you know, as you're aware, normally your employer contributions come in two parts. You pay the normal cost, which is the cost allocated to current year service for active members, and then you pay an amount to pay off your unfunded liability. Well, it goes the other way. If you have a surplus, you could actually end up amortizing the surplus as a credit. So then your employers would be paying less than the normal cost. And that's exactly what happened in the late 90s, because we had relatively short amortization periods for unfunded, which is good. It's very disciplined, and went the other way. So it didn't take very much surplus for you to get to where you had these contribution holidays. And so that's what led to actually some revisions in the guidance that we now look at. So we did look in your evaluation. We have these cost groups, which you're familiar with. And if we do projections, you've got one of your small cost groups. It's the number 6, which is small districts, non-enhanced tiers 1 and 4, which is already at that over 100% funding. The others are projected to get there sometime in the next few years. Of course, that's only if we don't have any market corrections that would offset the recent market gains that got us here. We like to remind folks that you have funding policy objectives. Those funding policy objectives are not really change when you go into surplus, but they also don't really tell you a whole lot about what to do about surplus, except this idea that you shouldn't get used to the plan being free. And that's actually what is how the guidance has emerged. So here on slide 6, if you look at guidance that is out there, it's not binding, but both the California group called the California Actuarial Advisory Panel and a national group called the Conference of Consulting Actuaries in the 2012-2014 era, they came out with guidance that says you do not want to do what we did in the 90s and just treat surplus as just the opposite of an unfunded. And in fact, what you want to do is you want to spread out the recognition of that surplus as slow as possible. So even though we would never say you should use 30-year rolling amortization, which means you basically never pay it off, we would never let you do that for your unfunded. We think that's a good idea with surplus, because you really don't want to get used to funding less than the normal cost. Not your employers. We don't want your employers to get used to that. Well, PURA, which is the California's pension reform law that came around in the 2012-2014 era, It goes one step further. It says, unless you are at least 20% overfunded, you will contribute, you, the employers, will contribute the full normal cost. And then if you are over 20% funded, you have to meet some other subjective requirements that we're not completely sure how you go about meeting those. And so what the general advice was, and some of this comes from a presentation that we made at the CalIPERS meeting earlier this month, is you should at least review your current funding policy. Well, the good news is that Contra Costa's funding policy was originally adopted in 2014. It was last amended in 2020, and it has been amended for these PEPR provisions. They are in there. So the policy says it has the PEPR requirement that you contribute full normal cost unless the surplus is at least 20% of the liability. And it also goes, now here's a little wrinkle. Suppose you're 119% funded, right? And then you're 120% funded, and you're 121% funded. Do you amortize the entire 21? Because that'd be boom, a big surprise. Well, your policy, and this is in our recommendation, says no. You only amortize the portion above that 20% quarter. So we're really gentle for how we sneak in on this. The other thing is you have these cost groups. What if one cost group is overfunded, another is not? I mean, you have that condition now, and you could certainly see that happen over the next couple of years. Well, the interpretation is that this PEPR requirement of 20%, that applies to the entire plan, which means that even if an individual cost group was more than 20% overfunded, if the entire plan is not 20%, and I hate even using the term overfunded, right? Because it sounds like, oh, we got extra money laying around, right? But even if the entire plan has a funded ratio above 120%, is that clinical enough for you? Then it would have to be the entire plan that meets that test before you would start allowing employers to contribute less than that full normal cost. So the thing we want you to try to sort of take away from this, and again, when this happens, we're going to have big conversations about this. Y'all remember C plus I equals B plus E, right? Contributions plus investment income equals benefit payments plus expenses. What happened in the 90s, in the late 90s, was, first of all, because they were amortizing those surpluses over a pretty short period, C went down, right? Contributions went down below normal cost. B plus I, B plus E, C went down. And then that led to, on the other side of the equal sign, B going up. So back in the 90s, we spent the surplus either on contribution reduction or on benefit increases. And what we're now saying is, let's learn from that, okay? And instead focus on So the way that what you can do is, you can, like the title here says, spend the surplus on lower your I, and you can do that one of two ways. You can either say, just keep your current asset allocation and just adopt a lower expected return, a more conservative expected return that will increase your confidence level, which we talk to you about every 3 years. So you basically reduce the risk of not hitting the assumption just by lowering the assumption. That's kind of that's sort of the actuarial way of spending the surplus on risk reduction. And you see how this works. If you lower the discount rate, it increases the liability until the liability is as big as your assets. So you make the surplus go away literally by lowering the discount. Now, a more intrinsic way to do that is to actually take investment risk off the table, not just actuarial assumption risk, but actual investment risk. And that would mean actually shift your asset allocation to lower risk, lower volatility, but therefore lower expected returns. Well, if you do that, if you change your asset allocation to go more into bonds, that will lower the expected return, and that will also lower the discount rate. So two ways to lower the discount rate, either just by direct action, so it's safer compared to your current asset mix, or you actually get the actuaries and the investment folks together talking about this and saying, let's take some honest to God investment risk off the table. And the last thing on this says, you can do that plain or fancy. You can just shift into a more conservative asset allocation, or you could say, you know, actuary, you tell us that our retirement benefit payments to current retirees are very predictable, and they are. So you can actually construct a portfolio of bonds where the cash flows from the bonds match the actual benefit payments for a particular block of retirees. This goes back to the 1950s. It's called immunization. So you can do something like that. That's this matching bond portfolio. Well, we're not doing any of this today, but we find ourselves in surplus. I think it would be reasonable for the board to talk to the actuary and the investment consultant. Is it time to actually take some risk off the table? There's one note to make here. Anytime you lower the discount, whether you do it just on the actuarial side or you actually de-risk the assets, that will increase the member contribution rate. Because not only does it increase the accrued liability to burn up the surplus, it also increases the normal cost. And under PEPR, the normal cost is split 50-50 with the members. So you have a situation where an action that is meant to, you know, keep the employer, I mean, employer contribution is already going down because there's no unfunded to pay off anymore. But by trying to lock that in through de-risking, it could also have the effect of increasing member contribution rates because you would have a higher normal cost that is then split 50-50 between the two. We were asked in broad terms to talk about the contra tracking account. I'm not going to go through this slide except to say it is separate from surplus. Contra tracking account tracks investment losses, but it does not track any payments that were made toward those investment losses. So this is also, we can park this for a later discussion, but you can be in surplus and still have the contra tracking account. And that only has an impact when you're trying to determine if you have what are called excess earnings. So again, this is we have this here for reference, but I just want to, a real point here is that it's two different calculations and they are not really coordinated. Surplus includes all of your experience, whereas contra tracking only looks at investments. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our prepared remarks, and we'd be happy to take any questions or comments.
Great. Thank you, Paul. I would note just on one of the last topics you touched on, you know, when we revised our portfolio and our strategic asset allocation mix, it seems like it was 6 or 7 years ago now, but it's been a while. You know, we actually de-risked the portfolio and we made some fundamental changes, including adopting a strategy that provides for a portion of the portfolio that's based on liquidity to meet the obligation, sort of in line with the 1950s model of, I guess you called it immunization. Was that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, similar concept. I mean, I realize that I'm talking in generalities, but the point is, the portfolio today is different than it was 10 years ago, and it's a less risky portfolio, and it also has some functional aspects. The primary one, which I just mentioned, which is to meet the benefit obligation. It's structured to do just that with a sub portfolio.
Yeah.
So we've already taken those steps. Anyway, questions for Paul. I just saw a hand up. Well, Jerry, your hand's up, but I think I saw one other one. Jerry, go ahead.
Quickly, Paul, I'm just interested, only because we try and touch base with other plans, what they're doing. Are you finding that this status for the Cesera plan is unique, or are most of the rest of your plans that you're dealing with seeing their funded ratio increasing as well?
We work on 12 of the county systems, and I think there's really maybe three or four where this is a reality coming up as we see here. We still have some plans that even with the big gains, they're still in that 80 to 90% funded range. So it's not a wholesale phenomenon, but it's close enough that I think, and we compare notes with Chiron and Milliman, who are the other actuaries that serve the California plans. And we're all having this conversation, starting to open this conversation. I know that Chiron had a conversation about this with Marin County, which was one of the ones that was, again, moving into full funding, very similar to what we've had here. So I think it's some, but not a lot. But all of them, it's close enough that we want to have the conversation before you have it. Because once you're in surplus, people are going to line up at the door and tell you how to spend.
And one other observation that I would make, if I can, Mr. Chair, that You know, those of us that have been around for a while have certainly seen this discussion go up and down. And there was a real cottage industry a number of years ago of people out there saying that the forecast, the discount rates were way too optimistic for plans, and that their funded ratios were way too low, and that basically Armageddon was unavoidable. Things can change, and I understand that we're looking at a different situation now, but I noticed that those speakers are not on the circuit as much as they were once before, and I'm happy to see that.
Let me get the order right. David and then John.
Paul, I think one of the concerns in increasing employee contribution rates, that's going to be a challenge. So in the past, I think the county addressed that to some degree by subvention of employee contributions. And now with PEPRA, is that no longer an option? It absolutely has to be 50-50?
I will defer to council, but that is my understanding, Mr. McDonald. Is that subvention is no longer permissible under PEPRA. Okay. Or pickups, as we used to call them.
John.
Paul, you mentioned this in the beginning of your comments. In all of the various reading I do on reactions in the press and otherwise to full funding, my sense is there is almost no grasp that it is different than what you would pay an insurance company to take over the obligation. That's a huge spread. Your comment that it's a budgeting issue was right on, except my sense is very few people recognize that. Should we be doing anything further in describing the meaning of full funding as a budgeting rather than as a take over the obligation role in an insurance company might play?
Mr. Phillips, that's very well observed. I will tell you, in your actual report, buried in a bunch of other text, there's a paragraph that says that this is not a settlement measure, and that the funded ratio does not measure what the liability would be if you tried to settle, because we're required to put that in there under actuarial standard practice number 4. But it is not highlighted. And I think that could be, I guess the question is, first, it's certainly worth having a conversation about, but nothing in our actuarial report is on a settlement basis. So the question would be, does the mere fact that we're moving into, from a budgeting standpoint, a fully funded condition, would that be a good time to remind the readers of our actuarial reports and your financial reports that these are all ongoing budgeting funding measures and none of them are actual settlement measures? And that actually goes to the earlier comment that, you know, back in the day when people were saying our discount rates were too high, there were two schools of thought that were doing that. Some just said we were being too optimistic. But the others, these market value proponents, they were saying we should be valued on a settlement basis. John, I'm talking around your answer a little bit. I will tell you there's something new coming your way, and we should probably have a quick session on this someday. Actuarial standard practice number 4 has been revised. It is effective February of next year, which means effective with your December 31, 2023 valuation. You are going to publish in your actuarial valuation report a measurement of liability using that so-called risk-free rate. So that number is going to appear in your report as a new requirement of a standard of practice. This is you may not have heard of this yet because it just came out a month ago. Mr. Phillips, maybe that will be the opportunity to not only remind folks that we are not talking about a settlement measure, but to also to illustrate, you know, more or less what that settlement value would be, because you will be required to put that in your actual report.
I had not heard of it, and I like it.
Yeah, very good. It's called the LDROM, the Low Default Risk Obligation Measure.
That's another acronym.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was going to be the Investment Risk Defeasance Measure. That was in the first exposure draft, and they didn't like that word defeasement, partly because, going to Mr. Phillips' point, they don't want people to necessarily think of this as a settlement measure. So, right. Mr. Phillips, it's not really giving you everything you want, not quite.
A question, Mike Sloan, or a comment.
Paul, what's the correlation between now that we're becoming more and more mature, what's the relationship between that and a fully funded? Is that going to make a difference as the cost increase for the mature position that we're in?
You know, the thing about becoming more mature, Mr. Sloan, it doesn't actually increase costs, but it makes your costs more volatile because you have larger liabilities and larger assets compared to payroll. And so what it will mean, because you're a more mature plan, that the chances of you sort of bouncing in and out of full funding are greater. So it doesn't mean that your funded ratio is higher or lower, but it means it's going to change more from year to year. That's really what maturity does. It doesn't increase cost, it increases the volatility of that cost in both directions. So that's how they tie together. That's one reason why one of those earlier slides, you know, I love layered amortization. I love having all that information. And what your policy says, the moment you touch being fully funded, poof, you wipe out all those layers. What I'm afraid is you're going to be fully funded like for a year, then the market correction, you go back, and we're going to lose all that information. So before we wipe out all those layers, we might take a look and look, Mr. Sloan, because you're more mature, do we think we're going to stay fully funded, or is this more of a temporary condition? But it's the additional volatility that is what correlates with the greater maturity.
I think, Paul, apropos of that last comment, Gail and I just briefly touched on this, but I know as the time gets closer, we're going to be scheduling more time, agenda time and input time on this, trying to ramp in as the clock winds down to get everything on the table and the discussions that need to be had fully aired and any decisions made. And do it in an orderly, sequential way. So this is a great way to start to kick it off in terms of the bonus round, right? Getting mm-hmm. the clock started. But I think our intent, I know our intent is that we are going to keep this topic in the fore and then agenda it as appropriate as we hit the milestone steps leading up to it.
Very good.
That's great. Any other comments for Paul? Questions? I do not see any hands up. So Paul, thank you. And I realize that you had a time constraint. Appreciate you making time for us today. And it worked out well. Thank you as always.
Thank you.
Very interesting topic.
Very good. Thank you. So great, we will sign off. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye.